This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Thank you for that introduction, Nathan. I certainly do not feel like I have a lot of answers. I am curious about something here. How many of you find yourself in the same role as far as staff evaluation, that's part of your responsibility? Could I see your hands? Okay, great. The reason I'm happy about that is because I'd like to, at the end, get some feedback from you. Maybe we can share together a little bit some of the things that you've learned. God has changed my life tremendously with some of these responsibilities, and hopefully we can all learn together. Begin with a question: why is this subject important? After all, we're in mission work, and why would we have to evaluate our staff? They're supposed to be missionaries, right? They come with fervor and zeal, and they're all fired up and ready to go. Well, I find that this is the reason why I think this subject is important, and that is that a person's personal life has a direct connection with his or her effectiveness in ministry. You cannot separate those two. For us as Anabaptist people, we believe that discipleship touches every area of life. And religion is not something that we do. Now, I understand that our government would like to believe that religion is something that you do, not something that you are. It seems like that is the shift of our society. I think this is one trait that separates us from other Christians, so-called Christians, evangelicals, if you would. But anyway, just to give you a little bit of an overview, some of the things that we'd like to cover, there's basically three areas that I'd like to look at. How do we effectively speak into the lives of our staff? And under that, I'd like to look at the evaluator. Understanding who is being evaluated, what makes the evaluation worthwhile and helpful, and how often should they happen, some other maybe a little bit more practical things. I would like to end with four basic questions that I'd like to maybe have some input from you. One is, and these are the ones that were posted in the description, just a little aside, if I don't know what you were expecting when you came, but I found it a little bit difficult to study 6 months in advance to give a workshop description, and this thing sort of morphed, and suddenly the thing is turning out this way. But anyway, God's truth is universal, so hopefully what's said today is meant to be said. One is, how do we grapple with actions stemming from unresolved conflicts in the past? How much room do we give for immaturity? How do we deal with those that have a weak conscience? And then, of course, the hot button that everybody's looking for. When is enough enough? When do we have to say, you're not being effective? When is that point? So anyway, we'll hopefully get to that point. My reference point is in a VS unit setting, we have approximately, staff numbers go up and down, we have approximately 45 single staff. There are 11 families that are involved at Faith Mission, and there are basically three areas that we evaluate. One is job and work related, the other is the spiritual progress, and lastly, socially or relationally. And I have a feeling these areas are areas that are going to be applicable across the board in any mission field. Job or work-related is maybe not quite as much the part of the evaluation, for my evaluation. In our setting there, we have, as Nathan said, we take care of intellectually disabled children and adults. And so oftentimes what happens, here come these youth, and they don't have any experience in parenting. So this is sort of a cutting their teeth in parenting type of thing. So there seems to be, as far as the on-job, there seems to be a lot of coaching. Maybe a little reprimand here that maybe you need to respond more in love versus yelling at them. Maybe you're just a little bit too harsh with this. We've seen the pendulum go from being amazed at the disciplines that are enforced to the other pendulum where it becomes casual, nonchalant, become very harsh. So we have to gauge that as well. But what I would like to focus in on more this afternoon is the other two, the spiritual progress and the social and relational. One of the first questions that I, one of the questions that Kyle had emailed to me initially was, what kind of criteria do we use here? I decided to do a little dictionary study. This can be revealing sometimes. And the definition I got for the word criterion is that it is a standard, a rule, or a test by which something can be measured by. In other words, it's the line in the sand. Now, I'm going to bunny trail here a little bit, and I hope I won't get too carried away, but I want to put in a plug for, I think, the standard that every one of us believes is the best standard around, and that's the Word of God. There is nothing that will trump this as your mandate. Those principles have stood over the years. I am so blessed when there are staff that maybe are at conflict with one another. I think of one girl that came in after a day off, and she was referring to this one staff fellow who I knew was very needy, and she sort of just spouted off about how pathetic their day off was together. And I was sitting there wondering what I could do to encourage her in a proper response, and before I could say it, she said, you know, maybe I need to watch my attitude as well. That just blessed me. And I sort of jumped on that and I said, you know what, you're exactly right. And we went from there. That idea of going to one another, that can be a tremendous help within your unit. And I would encourage that. I have wondered, that is something that we've tried to emphasize with our staff. I have wondered how well we've done. I'm not convinced we've always done so well, but it is something that we encourage. It can be a tremendously strengthening for them. I think of the high standards that the Bible raises. Think of the fruits of the Spirit. Think of the Beatitudes. Think of I think it was John that referred to Romans 12 or Ephesians 4, where there's so many commands that impact our lives. The thing about it is we have to know it. We have to know it in order to be able to use this sword of the Spirit. Now, I want to clarify something here. I don't want you to go away from here saying that this workshop speaker said you need the Bible and the Bible only. That's fine. I am emphasizing the fact that everything needs to be filtered through this. That's my emphasis. There are times that we have used other books, perhaps. I have to think of something that happened recently. There were some issues that we had found out about. This certain individual had some things from the past, and so we, my wife, spent a lot of hours with this lady working through John Koblenz's book, Getting Along with People God's Way. It is available here. I would highly recommend it. Lots of good practical things to work through. They would read a section and then they would meet together weekly to sort of discuss and work through. Excellent book to use. Something else I want to bring in at this point is our own experiences. Someone has once said that we are the sum total of our experiences, and I think that is so true. There are things that have happened in my life that have shaped me who I am. And one of my favorite passages the last few years has been Hebrews 12, the passage of the chastening of the Lord. He does it because he loves us. He doesn't want to keep you an immature Christian. He wants you to grow. With growth comes some pain. It comes some chipping away. You have to change. The other thing I was going to mention too is how do you gain experience? I'm one that believes that it's not just book learning. It's also, you have to start somewhere. And I think just put a little plug in here for Faith Builders and their teacher apprentice program. I don't know that much about it, but I know enough to know that they get some experience with some coaching or mentoring. Excellent, excellent. That's how you learn. It's evaluated. It's evaluated experience, and that can make a person better. Okay, let's go back to a few more ideas here. How do we effectively speak into the lives of our staff? I have four ideas here, and again, these are not, a lot of this stuff is things you've probably known, not anything new or earth-shaking here today. I attended a workshop earlier today on leadership, and I got a few really good ideas in that workshop. This is one we've all known. One of the most effective ways of leading, of course, is by example. It's something we've known for a long, long time. One of the challenges is when there are conflicts, when there are difficulties, to respond in the way that God would have us. Was my response in meekness? Did I do this in a loving way? Am I humble enough to admit when I make mistakes and to go back and to follow up and make apologies when necessary? You are really the showcase of godly virtues to your staff. And I challenge you to hold that bar high. We at Faith Mission Home, one of the things we do in try to encourage our staff is to show the 7 Laws of the Teacher by Dr. Howard Hendricks. And I have had the luxury, being as I'm administrator, of watching it for the last probably five or six years. And I'm encouraged and I'm excited about the fact that some of the things are starting to stick a little bit. I'm one that needs it line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little, once a year, that type of thing. One of the things he says is that you cannot impart what you do not possess. That is so true. You showcase to your staff what a Christian is supposed to be like in difficulty, in times of fun and happiness. You showcase to them what it's like. And so along with this, I would like to take a bit of a closer look at the evaluator. And I say this out of my own need, things I have had to learn. There is a sense in where, obviously, that if you're the evaluator, you're in some kind of a position of authority or responsibility. And so, in a sense, your private life, if you want to call it that, will also be on display. I had one staff fellow tell me one time that, before I came to Faith Mission, I didn't have a problem with anger, but, it has really been a struggle since I'm here. Well, I didn't quite buy it at face value. I think those seeds were maybe laying a bit dormant. Maybe he didn't even recognize it. I think it just sort of brought it to the surface, if you would. And that's the way it can be for us. If we're thrust into this position, maybe I didn't realize that I had a problem with sarcasm or anger. Just recently, I was reading in my personal Bible reading in Psalm 19, very familiar psalm, very familiar verse. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. And it suddenly struck me. There are two key truths in that verse. Number one is that nobody is exempt from making mistakes. The second one is that we tend to cover up or miss our own mistakes, our own errors. It reminds me of a quote from Darren Hardy. While we tend to judge others by their actions, we judge ourselves by our intentions. The second point I'd like to make here is just that of making a point of talking to them. We sit back and we wish, I just wish he would get it. Well, guess what? Go and address it. I have had to wonder how much this happens in today's church setting. I think some of it does. But part of the reason I asked that question is because recently, before a staff came, there were some questions that came up on the references. And so I drafted a letter, and we sent a copy of it to her, to her ministers, to her parents. And then I followed up with a phone call. When I called her, she was shocked. She said, nobody has ever said anything to me about it. Well, some time has passed since that happened, and I would probably guess she may not have got it just because I have had contact with the ministry. It's a bit of an unfortunate situation. But I've had to wonder, is that something that actually happens? Maybe nobody ever told me that the way that I come across is wrong. It's repulsive. So make a point of actually talking to them. Don't just wish that things were different. The other thing I'd like to point out here is about honesty. Truth can be really ugly sometimes. Truth can be very, very hurtful. I have four subpoints on this, on being honesty. I think the Bible has such a good balance on these things. Many times the Bible brings things in twos. You don't just have discipline. You don't just have love. You need both. You don't just have truth, but you do it in a loving way. And there's a whole lot more. I didn't actually look into. Somebody has told me that somebody did a study on the pairs, and it was amazing. And I haven't looked into that yet. Four subpoints on this, on being honesty. Think a little bit about criticism or being critical. I would say it this way: be honestly critical, but not excessively critical. Praise where and when you can. You know, everybody has something to contribute. Sometimes the challenge of our units is to build on what's there. That can be tough, and it always helps when you have good staff. And also, everybody can use positive encouragement. Unlike the man who told his wife on the day they got married, "I love you, and if that changes, I'll let you know." It doesn't work that way. Encouragement doesn't work that way either. If you tell them 8 months ago when they came that we're so glad that you're here, but they never heard it since, how are they going to know that you're glad that you're there? So try to give encouragement as you can. Maybe just a little bit of a criticism test for you. Is it easier for you to criticize somebody else or to compliment somebody else? What is your criticism to compliment ratio? Do you wait to compliment until you're ready to criticize? Well, if you do that, they're going to know that. Oh no, what's coming now? Second point I'd like to make here is that, this is for myself. I'm getting older. I was shocked when I sat in we call it our mail room. It's sort of the social hub of Faith Mission. It's been probably a year or two ago, and we got to talking about the Desert Storm. I couldn't believe how few of them knew about Desert Storm. I mean, everybody knows about Desert Storm. They were maybe two or three. That just blew me away. So as we're getting older, our perspectives changes, and we gain experience. And so we have to, I think, realizing that our perspective changes as we get older is something we should realize. The other thing I'd like to point out about being honest is about how we're coming through, how we're perceived. We can say the right words, but if our tone is wrong, it's all wrong. Well-known study suggests that 92% of how we communicate is non-verbally, either by tone of voice or by body action. 92%. So you're coming through loud and clear by posture, by facial expression, by tone of voice, and so on. There have been times that I have struggled myself with waiting too long. One of the things that happens when I do that is that then I sort of I feel guilty. There's complexities of my own guilt, the fact that I didn't take my responsibility. That's bad. That's a bad formula. The other thing I would like to bring in on this point is that are you putting on them your personal wishes more than it being an actual big problem? Just an example. There was a fellow there one time who, the way that he was relating to the girls, I thought was a little bit unhealthy. And I said something to him once, and it was a good meeting. But a few months later, he was there for about a year and a half. Sometime later, it was not healthy. It was not good. And so I talked to him again. And after he left that time, I pondered it a little bit, and I told myself, you know, I think that's enough. I don't think I can go back to him again, unless it would have just been very blatant. But either I was not coming through, or he didn't get it, or I took it as if it were myself, I wouldn't have been comfortable in doing what he was doing, but it's not necessarily showing itself up in somebody else. I took it as a personal wish, and I just sort of backed off a bit. We need wisdom to know when the time is to do that, but I think sometimes just being aware of our personal wishes and pouring it onto them, we may have to break it down into smaller bites for them, if you would. The last thing on honesty I'd like to point out here is the fact of presentation. I had some interesting tests and lessons in this. The first time I ever made contact was with a staff girl. There were some boy-girl things going on there that were not good at all. And I never gave it a single thought of how I was coming through. And I called her to the office, and we sat down, and I proceeded I don't think my spirit was necessarily wrong, but she was devastated. I mean, this is a big deal. I got called into the office, and she broke down and cried, and I felt horrible. I don't think I'll ever forget that. We talked later, and things were okay. But the thing I'd like to point out here is that you don't have to practice, if you would, of saying things just right. Your genuineness, your openness, your care for them are the things that will come through and the things that they will remember. So I'm all for being tactful. Don't get me wrong here. But I'm saying, my emphasis here is don't say, well, I'm just, you know, I don't think I can, because it's just, every time I do, I just think of whatever. Ask God for help. God can help you. For myself, the things I have learned is that I have to get into the right frame of spirit. And I'm not going to ask my wife to testify, but she could. There's times I come home and I'm all charged. And if I would follow through my gut instinct, I would make havoc. But I have to get control of myself. One of my coworkers has blessed me tremendously when he said, "Don't go into a meeting emotionally charged." And I think that's real good advice. The other thing on being honest here that I would like to point out is the thing of stating things plainly. And I still struggle with this. You can throw hints. You can try to be as nice and package this thing just right. But sometimes I've left people wondering, what was this all about? And so make sure that they understand. I will say there is a huge difference in people's sensitivity and their understanding. It's very helpful if you know who you're talking with. How are they going to perceive this? And so forth. Okay, fourth point on how to effectively speak into your staff's lives is to understand who you are evaluating. I alluded to this just a little bit ago. One of the struggles that we have a bit in our unit is the dichotomy between the administration and the staff. And I don't really like it personally. I have a bit of a tagline. My extension on my phone is 304, and so whenever they refer to 304 coming around, you sort of perk up, you know. It's good 304 wasn't around to see this, that type of thing. I don't really like that. And there was, yesterday we spent very valuable time with the two other units, Mountain View and Hillcrest, in expressing, this was one of the things we discussed, how do we work together as team spirit, and the dichotomy between the us and them mentality and so on. It is true that we have responsibilities. But I think if you can spend time with them, I like to engage them outside of the office. The office is sort of an intimidating place in a way. And so I go out and I bump into them and we chit-chat here and there. And I there's times when relationships between staff and administration go up and down. And it's not unusual for us to, on a bit of a low time, I'm very busy, I don't have time, I don't think I have time, to go out and to do that. even for us in our setting, just little things can really, really speak to them. There's certain fellows assigned to clean up the dining room after lunch, and just to go out there and to jump in. I've done that. We have a lot of staff right now, so I haven't done it a lot the last while, but that really means a lot. Just little things like that help build relationship. I think you should know the person that you're evaluating. I mentioned before the how do they respond, are they, and that type of thing. I don't know from experience how this would work, but it would seem to me that to remotely interview or evaluate staff, let's say a board member to a person that's actually on the field, I wonder on the effectiveness of that. Now, I'm not going to be critical if that's your setting, but somebody that's right there can see things a whole lot more. Okay. Oh, the other thing to remember too is that no two people are alike. What may work, sometimes we're tempted to think, hey, this worked in this person's life, I'm going to try it in this one. There's no two people alike. And so while there's general things that we can learn, it's no guarantee to success. We try to think efficiently. We're geared to think of the 10 ways to do this. Here's your magic list. It doesn't quite work that way with people. Another question I think we're going to get into this a little bit later too, as far as helping to understand who's being evaluated, is how hungry are they? There are some, in their journeys, they may be at a point in their Christian life that they may not be quite as hungry as they should be. And I'm not sure how to wake up the lukewarm and so on. But that can factor in. I think if a person is really genuine and they really want to, I think these kind of exchanges can be just life-changing. Okay, let's move on. Next point, what makes an evaluation worthwhile or helpful? I would like to answer that question by maybe asking a question. Who's to say that it was worthwhile? Isn't it a little bit subjective here? I tend to think that if it's worthwhile, I came through, they responded well, good, we got it. Maybe. What do you expect going into the meeting? And I think some of these things are just minding the spirit. It's hard to have a hard and fast, this is what you can expect in this situation. Again, we're dealing with people. There may be times that the work in a person's life merely began during the time that they spent in your presence. There was one particular staff fellow who, after he left, some things happened right at the tail end of his term that he later called back and apologized for. One of our administration personnel actually took an excellent approach and asked basically a question or two. And it took a little bit of time, but a couple months later he called back and he apologized for those actions that he had taken. So sometimes it takes just a little bit of time. Maybe you're only planting the seed. You might not see the full harvest of that. Other times we feel really good about a response and yes, I do want to change. I know this is a problem. But guess what? 3 months down the road, we're at the exact same place. What are your expectations? One thing to remember, it's not up to you to fix people. Only the Holy Spirit, I think, is the one that can do that. There's only so many externals that you can use to compel them to action. One of the things that I think that is valuable in making this worthwhile is to share your own experiences. It does a couple things. One, you probably have, generally, you have more experience than what they do. Secondly, it's humbling for you because they know that you're vulnerable as well. Now, of course, as I advance in age and the gap widens, it's maybe a little bit more of a challenge for me to do that. But I think that openness and that vulnerability is very valuable. The other thing is to make sure you spend enough time. Do not try to economize. They will pick that up. People are so much more perceptive than what we give them credit for, many times anyway. Don't try to economize. Make sure you can't hide. The other thing is to listen carefully. And I have, this is one I struggle with. I want to finish their sentences. I know where this thing's going. And I've got work to do. You know, let's just wrap this thing up and let's get on. Here's your fix and we're out. Well, it doesn't quite work that way. Again, we're dealing with people and it's a good reminder for me to listen carefully. The fifth point, truth is a lot more palatable when it's given in love. I'm repeating myself. Don't give them a list of 10 things to do type of thing. Ask for their advice as well. They sometimes have insights that are amazing. Just remember that love looks for what is best for the other person. And that looks different in different cases, in different situations. Okay, let's move on. How often should an evaluation happen? This is a little bit difficult for me because I think in different situations it's possibly different. There should be a balance. There are times that it's maybe needed more often. But again, then there's other times when it might not be needed as often. I think I like this illustration of somewhere in between the two extremes. Let's avoid the extremes here. If you do it too often, then maybe you're coming across as being too critical or micromanaging. Of course, it depends on the job. But if it's not frequent enough, maybe the administration don't care. Maybe that's what's being perceived. So I think we need to somewhat strike a balance. Okay. I would like to have a little bit of discussion on these next few questions. Like I said, I was really glad to see how many administration personnel are here. How do we grapple with actions stemming from unresolved conflicts in the past? I think what I'm going to do is maybe just go through here, add a few comments, and then maybe at the end of these four, I'll open it up at the very end. You can be thinking about this. How do we grapple with actions stemming from unresolved conflicts in the past? There are sometimes some lies that are believed about certain things. For instance, forgiveness. It's a one-time fix, and then we're done. Forgiveness doesn't totally work that way. So maybe there's some things there to work through. I think, again, I bring up a point I had earlier, and that is the thing of hunger. How hungry are they? I remember years ago when this truth really sank in, John Koblenz used to live in our community, attended our church for a couple of years, and one summer Bible school, he had a topic on interpersonal relationships. And I remember this verse being outstanding. He was going through the Beatitudes. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. There's a tremendous truth in that. God is faithful. He will fill our hunger. The very thing that I'm faced with. Now, sometimes, depending on the situation, maybe they're hungry for things like approval or love or acceptance or friends or recognition. They do need to reckon with their past. Have they forgiven? Have they made restitution? Just now, a situation comes to mind where one of our early experiences was of a girl who had some bitterness and had not worked through forgiveness with her stepmom. And it was a beautiful thing to have her. I think she came to our house after church one evening, if I remember correctly, and actually made that phone call. And to see that difference, that freedom, was just so rewarding. She was at the end of her rope. Her sisters had called and said, "We're suspicious she might be suicidal." I don't know if it was quite that bad or not, but things were pretty bad. But it's such a beautiful thing to see God's principles working. It works in the 21st century. All right, I would like to move on to the second question. That is the thing of maturity. How much room do we give for immaturity? Again, we're in our situation, we're dealing with youth. We're dealing with a fair lack of experience. I think we need to recognize it, possibly not excuse it. But for myself to understand that is helpful because it helps me to realize that they're not 40 years old. They've not had this experience. I'm coming at it from a totally different standpoint. At the same time, we have the opportunity to speak into their lives and maybe pull them up a little bit. One of the points I had with this is just ask them stimulating and thought-provoking questions. Engage them. Get them to stretch them a little bit. Things like, what do you envision yourself to be when you're an adult or my age? What are your goals for life? What steps are you taking in attaining those goals? Sometimes it's the thing of immaturity or lack of thinking is just laziness or not. They've never been stretched or stimulated in that area. Third question, how does one deal with an individual who has a weak conscience? And I know some of these sort of run together a little bit. This one can be a little bit difficult. I think one of the root issues here is possibly to see themselves for who they are. Take them to the holiness of God. I think of the scripture in Isaiah 6 that we're all familiar with. When Isaiah saw the Lord, he said, "Woe is me. This is a man of God." And I think if we can bring them to that point, they can see the holiness of God. Maybe they'll be able to understand who they really are. There are times that it was maybe partly their upbringing. I hear about the last 2 years or so, there was a minister at church who said this, and that sort of grabbed my attention. He said, an individual who did not receive enough discipline as a child will never understand grace. And I think he's right. I think he's right. For that person, that line is not fixed. It's fluid. It can be one thing one day and another thing the next. And it's very sad to try to hit that moving target. It's very difficult to work with an individual who has that mindset. Last question. This is probably the one everybody's been waiting for. When is enough enough? When do we pull the plug, as it were, and said, sorry, you're not really contributing anymore? One of the things that we face at our unit is this question: how often or how long do we extend mercy? Do we really do the person a favor by just being gracious? This is the basic question for us, and this is not always easy to get to, but the basic question has been for us, what is best for everybody involved? You have to protect your mission, you have to protect your other staff, but you also have to have a heart for the person who's at the center of the conflict. Is it better for them to go home to a poor home setting, to a bad church setting, etc.? I don't have the answers for that. I know God does. There have been times that we have sent people home. There have been times when we have sort of wrote it out, if you would. It's not easy to always know. In our case, there have been times when if there is a threat to the well-being of one of the residents, that the action is very quick, very decisive. We have to protect ourselves from liabilities. If you're dealing with more personal issues, it's hard to know. I would say it's always best to be in contact with your home people, that they know what to expect. And I don't know that we've always done this the best way, or always handled this the best way. I think it's good if a person from the home community can sort of follow through, work with that person. There may be times that if there are things of the past that the person just refuses to, that's too big, I can't work through that. For us especially, our primary mission is to give care and training to intellectually disabled children and adults. Well, that cannot suffer at the expense of trying to help a staff person. If it comes to that point, then we have to look at it honestly and say, is this really what we want to do? And I'm sure that's very different for each of your missions and settings that you find yourself. Just don't let your target mission field suffer, I guess, is sort of the bottom line. Okay, I'm going to open it up for your input. Let's see here. Why don't we start by just looking at the first one? Any input on the question about how do we as a unit look at this thing, particularly from an unresolved conflict? The way we're structured at Faith Mission, we don't really have an intense mentoring program. Again, we don't feel that that's necessarily our target mission field. At the same time, in working with the intellectually disabled, there are things that they'll learn about themselves. I find it very ironic. The staff come and they say, well, we're here to help take care of and train the children. But then when they leave, they say, they taught me so much. I feel like they taught me way more than what I taught them. And I think it's a beautiful thing. It's the way God's kingdom can work. So how do we, any input from you all? I appreciate you bringing that in. The emphasis on open communication and being in contact, yes, thank you. That's very important. Very important. Good point. Okay, good question. Am I understanding the question correctly that you're, in other words, believe in faith that God is going to protect you from that liability? For us, it's fairly easy. I say fairly easy. If it's, okay, for instance, we have a very distinct discipline policy, and if that is breached, we could get into hot water really, really quick. And so if there are things that are outside of protocol, then we don't have time to just say, well, you better not do that again, because we're very deliberate with our policy. Now, again, our situation is probably a little bit unique in that way, or possibly in that way. That's more where I was coming from. Doesn't know if that sheds any light on it or not. Any thoughts anybody has on immaturity or how to help those with a weak conscience? I know there's a lot of experience sitting here. What have you done to help them open their eyes to it, I guess, is sort of what I'm getting at. And same here, that's been our experience as well. That's to me, personally, that's to me what keeps me going. I love to see that. There's an individual there right now who, when she came, was very, very unsure of herself and was asking questions. Now, she takes this boy and says, come on, we're gonna be going here, you know. That was so not her. And I actually talked to someone else who had known her, who was also there before she came. And she said, oh, when I heard that she was coming, I said, oh, no. How in the world is she going to make it? It's a tremendous, yeah. To me, that is so exciting. So thank you for bringing that in. I don't want this to be all negative. There's tremendous, the thing that always impresses me is the fact that we have the opportunity to touch future. If we're dealing with young people, we can help steer possibly help steer them in the right direction, possibly influencing the church to come. Isn't that exciting? We're part of that. To me, that's thrilling. Yes. That's right. I think that's part of the mistake I made early on, that first initial contact I had. I was new on the job. It was only a month or two after I took the position, and I was just very unprepared for for that response. Anything else anybody has before we close? We need to bring this to a close. Yes. Good question. For ourselves in our situation, I have encouraged the staff to go to that person. That it does one of two things. It does something for them because they're actually speaking into somebody else's life. It's applying the concept in the Bible where it talks about your brother has a need, you go and you meet that need. For us, it has been much more insightful from an administrative standpoint if they do that. Now, I can get real lazy real quick if that happens, to try to depend on that. I think maybe that question sort of ties into the whole thing of team spirit and togetherness. One of the things, maybe another thing that enters in here is the illustration of the open hand. This is what I observe. It's a little bit like one a friend of mine said. He said, this is what I observe you doing. This is what I understand that we're supposed to do or what would be better. What are some ways, can you tell me, can you help me understand what I'm seeing here so that I can believe in your integrity? And I think that's a wise approach. All right, we need to close. Nathan.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.